Hello everybody and welcome back to Discerning Consciousness. I'm your host Ant-Man and I'm delighted to welcome Mike back today. Good to see you, Mike.
Good to see you too, Anthony. Thanks for inviting me back on.
Thank you very much. So today we're going to talk about the mystery of life. The title of this episode is called Piecing Together the Mystery of Life. It's quite a grand title, I think you'll all agree. What we're alluding to today really is about when you are on the path, on the spiritual path, or whatever phrase you want to use, towards selfhood, understanding about the truth of yourself and the truth of existence and life itself, there can be it's a bit of a struggle to trying to fit it all together, to try and it just seems completely overwhelming. I don't know if you agree with me, Mike.
It's
just so many different healing modalities, there's so many different, you know, practices. It's like, where does one go? It can be difficult, can't it?
Definitely. I mean, the whole idea of it being overwhelming, it never stops being overwhelming.
No.
I mean, you think you've got a grasp of what's going on, what's out there, and then you realise, no, that's even just itself a small part of a bigger picture.
Yeah.
And it just keeps going on like that.
Yeah, or the phrase I've heard someone say is wheels within wheels. And it never stops, really. But obviously we have this real intense need to know, this real intense need, I believe, when you're on the path, to understand as well. So we go out there in the world and, you know, we might join local spiritual groups, we might join yoga groups, we might join mindfulness groups, whatever it is we become part of, but we're looking for this answer. And there are many pieces of the puzzle, aren't there?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, though, that everyone's looking for a different piece of the puzzle.
Mm.
And it's the most interesting thing, I find, that every time you go along to a different thing to check it out, see what it's like, what it's all about, every individual unit seems to sell itself as like the one thing you need to solve all your ills.
So like the answer that you need.
Yeah, like it's everything.
Mm.
You don't need to look anywhere else. Just come here. I've got it.
Yeah.
And I always find, though, looking at them, like, well, actually, that's just a small, tiny bit within the larger picture itself.
Yeah.
And this is where I really thought this was an important topic to bring up.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, just some examples, of course, as I mentioned before, are mindfulness. You've got the whole, within the whole New Age field, you've got the ascension movement, whereby you're supposed to, you know, be able to tap your hidden potential by activating your higher dimensions, your higher chakras even. You've got the whole angelic realms. There's a whole, you know, a whole gamut, it just never ends, really. But, you know, the point is, each one, as you're saying, Mike, will put itself up there as having the answer, as having the prescriptive cure for all your problems. And, you know, this is all you need on your path. This is the answer.
Like you often say, it's the it factor.
The it factor, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and that's what they, in essence, they are all offering, aren't they?
Well, I guess in a way they do it in a business sense.
Yes, yeah. And I believe Bashar has spoken on this issue as well, hasn't he?
Yeah, so I love the way he puts it in the terms of they are just permission slips.
Yeah.
So, I mean, often people think, well, the path to enlightenment, there's only one path, obviously, because it's just one place you're going to.
Yeah.
But the great thing about it is there's 1,001 ways in which you can do this.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, there's millions and millions of things you could do in that sense. So it's just the idea that you're allowing yourself to advance on your path by trying out that method.
Mm.
I mean, it might not exactly work for you, but give it a try.
Mm. And we should just inform for our listeners who might be unfamiliar with who Bashar is, Mike, if you could just obviously give some information on that.
Yeah, so Bashar is a channeled entity in that sense, through a person called Daryl Anker.
Yeah.
Search him up on YouTube. It's some fantastic stuff in this area. Because I just love the way he puts everything in a simple, down-to-earth way.
He does, yeah. Very humorous as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Because one of the big things that you find is, especially in the spiritual movement, yeah. is everyone's looking for that plink and fluffy, take all my problems away.
Sure.
The magic bullet in that sense.
Sure. Or just for a prescriptive cure, as I said before, just to make them feel good about themselves.
And he doesn't go for that.
No.
No, no. It's very much a straight to the point, come on, what are you faffing about?
Sure.
And, yeah, just watch it. It's amazing.
And as with a lot of good teachers and guys, with a good dose of humility as well.
Yeah.
And humour, yeah, as we said before, yeah.
Well, I often find if you tell someone the truth, make them laugh, otherwise they'll kill you.
Yeah, it can be a good approach, yeah. So let's look a bit more. We just touched upon the idea of mindfulness, you know, aspects of the New Age in terms of the Ascension movement and angels and things such as that. Another area, of course, it was very popular a few years ago, was The Secret, Michael, wasn't it, of course?
Yeah, so this was the idea that you have the power to control your life. Mm. And it is very true in what the message
says. It was a film, I believe, originally, then a series of books, basically an everyday man and woman's approach to the manifestation process. It's very popular, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's good information.
Mm.
The only thing is, it is a bit incomplete in that sense. So again, it's not the whole picture.
Yeah.
It's just giving you a small dose of it that you can apply to your daily life in that sense.
Mm. Yeah. So in terms of what do you believe is missing, what does it have and what is missing?
I think Bob Proctor said it best, and what it's missing really is the whole idea that showing you how the mind is set up.
Yeah.
And what parts of your mind you don't necessarily have control of.
Mm.
And it's the whole idea of paradigms that he goes on so much about, which set your ethos in life, set how you do things.
Mm.
Almost set which options you consider and which you don't.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, controls your life.
And his approach is very rational, almost scientific, isn't it, in a way?
Yeah.
And I know that's why it probably appealed to you.
Yeah, so, I mean, he explains it clearly and just gives it right there about, do you want to change your life?
I know he's been around for quite a long time, because I've seen some YouTube clips of him and they look quite dated back in the 80s, but the information he's been putting out for the last 30, 40 years is amazing stuff, isn't it?
Well, this is the thing. Essentially, everything that he's been doing for decades is major part of the focus of The Secret.
Yeah, and yet, you know, when it was published, it was this amazing, you know, The Secret, this new information about, you know, how to manifest your perfect partner, your perfect, you know, life,
well,
your
I
perfect
think
car and all the rest of it. But as you say, well, this knowledge is the knowledge of the ages, and what they're presenting is a very incomplete story.
And at the end of the day, I think it's all down to the marketing of it.
Because
at the end of the day, everything's about money these days.
Mm.
So even though they are giving out true information,
mm.
they're selling it as the complete package, which kind of isn't in that sense.
Mm.
But at the same time, it's got to sell it to you in a way that it seems attractive to purchase. And in that way, they do have to brand it in that sense.
And as with all marketing, as we know, Mike, you will, of course, the customer or the client, in order for this product to be successful, the customer has to do very little. And, you know, as with The Secret, well, it's just about thinking in a certain way, you know. And if they were to go into any more greater depth, then, of course, it maybe wouldn't be quite as popular.
Well, this is the thing about it, again, where it's all about the manifestation. It's just about getting what you want in life.
Mm.
It's not necessarily going through what you need in life.
Yes, yeah. I wonder if you could speak to this misunderstanding of the manifestation process, because we've slightly alluded to it earlier. What do you see then as, in the more New Age area, what are they missing out on? Or what aren't they perceiving, or what isn't part of the picture?
Well, a part of the picture tends to come from pure escapism, really.
Yeah.
And that's down to the fact that it's all about getting what you want in life, not dealing with the bad stuff, avoiding the negatives.
So would you say that being unaware of your unconscious desires as well?
In that sense, because as spirituality goes, it is fairly superficial in that
sense.
It's all about feeding the ego.
And as we know, we spoke about this in a previous episode of Discerning Consciousness about the ego. The role of the ego whilst on the path to selfhood is key, isn't it? There's a lot of misconceptions.
Well, the ego is the toughest and most brilliant thing of all, I guess, at the end of the day, because it's what helps us get what we want.
It helps us survive.
It's always there because, you know, in that time of need when you're like, all right, think, what do I need? Suddenly, boom, an idea, you've got it. Sometimes that's the ego going, right, do this, that'll do it for you. And we need it for survival at the end of the day. But at the same time, it is our greatest enemy. And at the same time, we think of it as our greatest friend.
Would you agree with me, Mike, that, excuse me, would you agree with me that one of the main problems within the spiritual New Age world is this belief that we need to destroy it and that it's our enemy? Because there's some schools of thinking, isn't there, and some teachers on the ego that go to that level, isn't there?
Well, I would agree with them in one level, in the fact that it does stand as an enemy to begin with. But I believe you're right in the sense that we don't want to make it our enemy. We need to make it our friend in that sense. Because the ego isn't necessarily bad, even though it currently stands as our greatest enemy. But that's because we're almost fighting against it.
Is that because we're misperceiving it? And in a way, one of the ways we misperceive it is it has ascendancy in our being when really it should be, you know, more part of the background scene. It's there, it's an important has an important part to play, but it really doesn't want to be in an ascendant role, and that's when all the problems come about. And as we know, as we were talking about before this recording, modern Western society is based on ego gratification. So everything we see, celebrity culture, corporate culture, you know, it's all about the ego front and forward.
The one-upmanship, having the best thing, or look at this, look what I got, look what I'm wearing,
and all expensive. The fear-based advertising.
Yeah, so we do live in the ego world.
Yeah,
yeah, which does mean that we're constantly trying to feed the ego in that sense, and that's why we do have the battle with the ego. You know, doing what's right or doing what feeds the ego, and generally the ego wins in that sense.
And it can be quite difficult. So I know from some of my own experiences, I've misinterpreted the ego in terms of the fact that sometimes if you're coming from a place of negativity or where the saboteur voice is in the ascendancy, that can be coming from the ego as well. So an overly egoic expression, if you will, isn't just necessarily pomposity, arrogance. It can be, you know, issues around self-esteem and such like.
Oh, definitely. Well, this is the biggest misperception of the ego, as most people just think of the ego as someone who's full of themselves. But the ego is, I mean, more broadly speaking, essentially just like the rational thinking mind itself.
Yes, yeah.
'Cause at the end of the day, that's not who we truly are. And that's where the battle comes from between who we truly are. And the thinking mind self, in terms of, right, I should do this because I can get this out of it, or I should do this because it's going to be that benefit. And, I mean, have you ever seen the film Revolver?
Yes. Yeah.
It so beautifully portrays this whole image about the battle against you and your ego. And it explains it in the most poetic way possible, really, in the way of a chess game.
I believe also, sorry to interrupt, Mike, in terms of the ego and someone's self-destruction, I think of Scarface as another good example of that. You know. Sorry, were you going to speak a bit more about that?
No, I was just going to say, but funny, bringing the idea of self-destruction with that, because the fact is, it's almost like, right, I need more, I need more, I need more. And at the whole time, the ego is trying to essentially fill a hole.
Yeah, almost like pouring water into a colander, isn't it?
Yeah. And it can never be filled because the thing the ego wants to fill it with aren't what it's designed to be filled with.
Absolutely.
So at the end of the day, we're trying to fill that hole in our heart we all have where we just want to be loved and accepted. for who we are, and that doesn't really happen until you build those relationships. So it's not about the things that you have that your ego wants, it's about what you truly need.
Yeah, and just referring back to Scarface again, of course, who can forget the scene at the end where he's literally got mountains of coke on the desk.
And he's just like covered in it.
That's a great image, isn't it? So just to cover a little point of what you were talking about, the ego, when before we were mentioning the fact that within some of the New Age spiritual circles, there's this misperception of, you know, needing to destroy the ego and, you know, go off to some Himalayan mountainside and work for years on destroying that evil ego. What you're saying, well, the ego isn't even us anyway. There's that misperception, because obviously the real us is that higher self beyond the ego. Is that right?
Yeah, so... And this is the greatest trick the devil ever pulled, is convincing you he doesn't even exist.
Yes.
And that is the perfect way of explaining the ego.
Yeah.
In the fact that it's convinced you it's you.
Yeah.
And that's where, I mean, destroying the ego has almost become the buzzword.
It has, yeah.
But really what they're trying to refer to is actually getting to know yourself and getting to know what your ego is.
Mm.
And when you actually start to identify the differences and truly get to know yourself,
yeah,
that's when you truly have self-mastery. And that's the whole goal of the whole process.
Those, you use the word self-mastery as a nice little segue into what I would hope we can talk about next, Mark. Mark? Mike, you suddenly changed. I must give up the wacky backy, Mike, even, is the mystery schools and magic and hermeticism. I got that right, didn't I?
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if you can touch upon that, because that's obviously a more formal process.
Yeah, so as we were saying earlier, there's different like New Age practices of like the ascension process and mindfulness and all this.
Which obviously you can are people's first entry point, because, you know, you can just go along to a spiritual group, but it's a bit different. You can't just knock, you know, at your local mystery school. You generally have to be invited in, or, you know.
Yeah, because there's a lot more like cloak and dagger, a lot more secrecy, because it adds to the mystery of it. But it's almost more like a private school type method of teaching in that sense.
Do you mean in terms of also there's a strong initiatic process as well?
Yeah, yeah, where there's a certain hierarchy going on. But it has the same sort of knowledge in teaching you, in a way, a more complete understanding of how the universe works. But the only problem is it's done in a very... segregated way. So you only get to learn little bits at a time. I mean, I understand the process why they do this, but I do find the idea very annoying.
Certainly in this age when it's all about all that information is out there. But I agree with you, Mark. I've done it again. Mike, why that initiatory process is there, I do understand why it is there.
Yeah, the whole idea that you need to spend a certain amount of time with an idea, with a concept. Because I always find that you first learn about a concept and you think you understand it, but then the more you think about it, the more you realise that there's more to it. And then suddenly you have a bigger understanding of the idea.
And I suppose in the mystery schools, it would be about actually demonstrating that you've integrated those principles before you would be, you know, able to move on to a higher grade or level or degree.
Exactly. I mean, I have to admit, what you said there about integrating it, that's one of the key things behind everything that we've talking about. Because it's okay to go along to an ascension group or a mindfulness class.
It's very
class.
Pleasant, polite, you know, people there might, you know, make pleasant and you feel good about yourself and all the rest of it. But really, I mean, is there any difference going to a local church group? I mean, that's as far as, you know what I mean? If we're just doing these things to make us feel good,
it becomes like a social outing rather than something you're trying to do to advance yourself.
Or as our resident shaman says, weekend spiritual type, or weekend spiritualism,
Yeah, because it's not until you actually integrate the practices into your life that you can really start going down that path, really understanding, growing, and becoming a more complete person in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, I like the phrase self-mastery, because that is exactly the goal or the target in the mystery schools, isn't it? That is what the adept, I think they're called the adept, that is what, you know, as an adept you're trying to achieve.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, this is why it's the biggest problem in, say, the idea of the secret. Of, like, yeah, you might want a certain thing. You might follow the practices. But if you don't have that mastery of mind, you're not going to achieve your goals. Because it's all about where you put your energy at the end of the day. And if you're not constantly feeding what you want with energy, you're not going to achieve it.
So is that where it all begins, with stilling the mind? Now it sounds like a cliche, but it's true. And that is often, that understanding isn't explained to people in the New Age spiritual field, again, because that you know, speaks of having to actually work on yourself and do practices, you know, and actually have some sort of discipline.
Yeah, yeah, that's the hardest part of it, the discipline of it.
So, obviously, key element of the mystery schools is, and they will touch upon quite a lot, is magic.
Yeah, so magic is the idea, well, magic with a K.
I was just about to say.
Yeah.
We're not talking about Paul Daniels, magic. God bless his heart.
Or just like that.
Yeah, just like that, yeah.
Yeah, so magic with a K is the idea that you have, well, it's essentially the same thing as the secret in terms of the idea of manifestation, using synchronicity to bring to you what you want. The only difference is, I believe, going back to the idea of Bashar, with permission slips. It's just different ways you want to tell yourself you're achieving your goals. I mean, both methods work. They just employ different practices to get there.
And am I right in thinking the first principle of magic, of course, is that everything is mind?
Yeah, in terms of the hermeticism,
yeah,
which is a big part of the magic mystery schools.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and brings again the idea of self-mastery. But it's the idea that everything is mind, everything is mental. And this brings down to, you need to be able to control your mind before you can have any real success about controlling outside events, achieving the synchronicities you want.
And of course, that is a very, for me, sensible, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a very sensible safety procedure, if you like, because you wouldn't want unconscious people having creational powers, because that would be very, very scary.
Well, in actual fact, they kind of do.
They kind of unconsciously create, and that's why we live in such a chaotic world, perhaps.
Exactly. The idea...
We're all conscious co-creators, it's a phrase I've heard.
Yes, well, that's the idea.
Yeah, of getting, or we're moving from that, unconscious co-creators to conscious co-creators.
Yeah, because the idea of synchronicities is we are always where we need to be at the exact moment in time we need to be there. There's never any mistake in that fact.
The ego doesn't agree with that.
No.
You know, when we can't sleep at 2 or 3 in the morning and the tears are flowing and it feels like, you know, our whole life is going to shit.
But the fact is, you need to be there. And you need to experience that to achieve what you want to go. You know,
that's a great point. That's a very philosophical point.
Because like I said, we are always using the manifestation process with synchronicity to achieve not always what we want, but essentially what we need. But the problem is, we are doing this so unconsciously that it's always all over the place. And I mean, I always like the idea of, like, it's magnets and it's attraction and repelling.
So a push-pull dynamic. Yeah.
Now, every time you put more energy into something that you want, you're magnetizing
it. Charging the molecules.
Yeah, so it's going to attract to where you want to go. I mean, they always say about, you put half the work in and the universe does the rest.
Yeah, yeah.
But the problem is, if you're doing this unconsciously, you're all over the place. You're doing a little bit here, a little bit there, a little bit there, a little bit there. So if you keep going up, down, left, right, back, forward, you're never really getting anywhere. You're just circling in the spot.
So really, we need to focus our energies.
That's one of the most major points of magic in that sense.
And that's really
alluding... It's focusing your mind and your energy on your goal.
And alluding back to the title of Piecing Together the Mystery of Life, the title of this podcast episode today, that's what it all comes down to, doesn't it? Because it doesn't really matter what you're doing in life. It's about having that focus. You know, obviously that's what Bob Proctor talks about a lot in his teachings. You know, without that focus, without a coherent approach to that focus, it's just chaos, confusion, and unhappiness, really, because you can't manifest the world, the life that you want.
Yeah. And going back to the fact that it's the ego which normally causes our constant, oh, I want to go this way, I want to go that way.
Well, it's the compass, isn't it? It's the ego that's driving our compass, our internal compass.
And if we don't have that under control, we're all over the place. And that's why going back to the universe is mind, the universe is mental, is the key prospect, the key understanding that you need. Because it's not until we get that under control that we can get what we want.
And that's why the principle of most teachings going back many thousands of years, or religions, and, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism, and all the, as I say, these religions, is about stilling the mind. That's the principle of all of these, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why mindfulness is very important. Yes. I mean, I often...
It's become a misused phrase, but the basis of it is very important. Or people, you get people out there who say they're trained mindfulness practitioners. It's a little bit of a grand title for just basically sitting and going within.
Do you know what? I find mindfulness is the most scoffed at word ever.
It's because it's become so misused, isn't it?
Yeah. But it does have its place. It is important. But it's not until you understand the whole mentalness aspect of it that you realise its true nature.
It's been about, it's taken out of context, and like you're trying to explain, it's in its fullest context. Yeah. I wonder, Mike, if we could just move on now and cover this whole idea that often springs to my mind, is for when people first step on the spiritual path, or, you know, they have an awareness of how the world is operating, they might for the first time have an awareness, you know, of evil, and they obviously they're looking for new answers, new solutions from what the mainstream offers them, or they may have been involved in the mainstream religions and that hasn't worked for them. There is this tendency when we jump from one paradigm to another, whatever it might be called, the new age, the alternative paradigm, this dreaded thing of escapism, how very easy it is to look for that, or feel that, you know, we are progressing and moving, we're actually, really, we're just in sedation, which largely normally is a form of escapism.
Well, escapism is the big trap.
We all do it. Yeah. Fall into it.
Because at the end of the day, life is hard. And we all need those 10 minutes away, half an hour, you know, every now and then, of just escaping the world and doing something else, taking your mind off it. Because it's too stressful otherwise.
Well, I mean, alluding back to what you were talking about in terms of self-mastery, in order to become the master of oneself, wow, you've got to go through a lot of dark nights of the souls. You've got to come to a lot of very profound, uncomfortable understandings. So like you say, Mike, got it right this time. that is very challenging, because the human organism, you know, we move towards comfort. We move away from pain, don't we? Once we learn as a child that if you put your hand in the fire, it hurts, it scalds, it's very painful. Then, you know, unless you're a masochist, you don't, you know, we don't naturally move towards pain. And yet this whole initiatic process towards self-mastery is about going through pain, isn't it?
Well, you're exactly right there. But in one crazy way, we kind of are all running around as masochists.
Already?
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
But it's the ego that tricks us into thinking we're not.
We're not, yeah. Blinds us, doesn't it?
It really does. And this is, again, why the mental aspect is so important.
Yeah.
But the whole escapism thing comes from the fact that everyone is running away from something in their lives. Because normally people don't go onto the spiritual path unless they're going through some sort of trauma, something's not working, and they think it's the only solution left.
It will normally be triggered by a sadness, an unhappiness, or a life event that brings those emotions on, won't it?
Definitely. So, and I like to call this group the pink and fluffy group of people that will do the whole escapism thing. The whole avoid the negatives, focus on the positives, which they are correct in so much as it's a very simplistic way of looking at certain principles within The Secret. Yeah, because if you're focusing on the positive, you'll be heading in that positive direction. The only problem is the misunderstanding of this incomplete picture leads us to want to run away from any problems we have because
So we run away from our own shadow, and that's when big problems come.
because in actual fact, no growth comes without pain.
No.
And at the end of the day, this is what the whole journey is about. Is about spiritual
Do you think
growth.
some of the pain, Mike, is the giving up of the previous, say, maybe might be misunderstandings about ourselves? The pain is that process of, shedding, if you like, almost.
Well, the shamanic practitioner I go and see always says, have her, I think she's been on a couple of times. She actually always says it is the shedding of the skin, like the snake analogy. So we need to learn how to shed the skin and not be afraid of the changes, because that's the biggest thing. Everyone's afraid of
And
change.
as we said in our previous recording together, Mike, about the simple life or the simple path, a phrase again that Heather's used, the shitty nappy, we get used to that warm feeling, as in one sense it might be uncomfortable, but it's still familiar.
Well,
It's the familiarity, so it's the fear of giving up of the familiarity.
and that's what makes us all masochists.
Exactly, yeah.
Because at the
We
end of the
like that
day,
turd on our ass.
yeah, we've got used to it.
Yeah,
We
it's kind of warm.
like it now. It's like you say, the safety blanket.
Yeah.
But it's getting rid of that and going through the pain, turmoil, and at the end of the day, the chaos of life that allows us to grow. I mean, like, I always used to think of the idea of you wanted an easy life, and that's the best you could hope for, an easy life. No
I mean, that's
struggles.
when you're in the mainstream, and all your points, your incoming information, that's all we get, isn't it? I mean, ultimately, it's, well, you'll be happy if you win the lottery, or if you meet someone that happens to have a lot of money, or you're successful, or you're popular, or you're a film star or footballer. That all revolves around that idea, doesn't it? Of comfort, that's in essence.
The materialistic, you've made
And of
it.
course, we live in a material plane, so part of self-mastery is to create material abundance.
Definitely.
And I think that is lost on a lot of people in the New Age spiritual field.
Well, there's a lot of conflictions and ideas, like people will start thinking that actually money is bad in that sense, and then think, well, actually, to be spiritual is to not have much money. But there's nothing wrong with that. And I think abundance rule is meant to be the main aim of the game in that
And
sense.
hopefully that is what we should be moving towards in this ascension or this deepening of human consciousness, whereby, as we know, there's enough creative potential within the entire universe to create abundance for far more than 7 billion souls. It's just the system creates false scarcity.
I like the phrase, can't remember who said it, but it goes, there's enough food out there to feed everybody, but there's not enough money to pay for
No, exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's like there's always plenty of money for things like war, but there might be a local community project that closes because there's a lack of money. How does that work, you know? Also in the area of escapism, Mike, I wonder if we could just talk briefly about this idea of looking for gurus and teachers or the supposed wise ones. I know myself, in the past, not so much now, where I've been looking and elevated people who I felt have all the answers, and eventually that's largely normal, as it would be for most people, a process of researching online, and you get your favorite researchers or authors or academics, whatever they might be, and then you stick to them, and then you realize, oh, actually they don't have the whole picture. Then you move on to the next one, and then you realize, well, actually none of them do. And then as you get towards the end of that process, you think, part of starting this podcast was realizing, oh, maybe I have something to contribute as an individual as well.
I believe everyone's got something to contribute in that sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're so right in the fact that, well, essentially when you start this process, of course you're looking for a certain guru, a certain person who knows, someone to help lead the way, because...
Well, because you feel helpless.
Yeah, because when you're starting off in a new field and you know nothing, it's kind of what you have to do. Well, unless you just go online and research everything yourself, but that's a tad more boring in that sense.
So we do start with those training wheels, don't we?
Not only that, we are set up in this world to be taught. You know, we're always taught at school. We don't naturally just go out and learn. We're always taught. It's always quite a passive thing. I mean, one of the most interesting things I found doing all this work within the spiritualist world is now it's more of an active thing. Because it's much more about integrating those lessons. But sorry, I digress.
No, I do agree with you, Mike, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners will agree. Initially, it is, you do seek it all outside of yourself, in teachers and gurus and researchers and academics and whatever label they might have. But then you realise, well, as I said before, they've only got a part of the puzzle, you know, a part of the whole, and realise it all does come back down to you and the idea of self-mastery again.
Yeah, and at the end of the day, it's not always about having a complete picture.
No.
Because no one has.
No.
And no one will ever have a complete picture.
No, I mean, that's
sense.
A truism of life is, you know, everything is always about process. You know, the whole story of life is uncompletion, if you like. We're just, you know, following through. If you think about the first law of thermodynamics, entropy, everything goes down to its end, you know, is in the process. And that's a bit like life. We're just passing through.
Everything changes.
Yeah, everything changes. So you can never get that final piece, as much as it would be very nice.
But at the end of the day, none of that stops you from achieving your main aim of knowing thyself.
Man, know thyself.
No, it just makes me think of that part of the Matrix.
Yes.
But that's why it's there, because it is a key part of the thing. And you can't really know thyself until... you get to know the ego.
Just now, I wonder if we could just go back to Bashar, because I believe, has he spoken on this idea about deprogramming? Or was that someone else? Because obviously, before you begin this process, it's very important to deprogram.
Well, I have to admit, I call it deprogramming. Someone else has called it mental malware.
Yeah.
But it's the idea that throughout our lives, we have just picked up lots of little bits of stuff that actually don't serve us, don't help us. They may be things that you've picked up from your parents. It may be something that you've watched in a film and you start doing that. It may be something that your teacher's always told you.
Yeah.
And... essentially, because our brains work a bit like a computer, processing and storing of information, we've got them all collected up from all our lives.
Yeah.
And the idea is we've got to try and work our way through all this and get rid of what's not helpful, what's not useful.
Is that the malware then?
Yes, that's why they call it the mental malware. But it comes to the idea that you should not seek enlightenment. You should realise that you already are enlightened.
Yeah, as David Icke says, ad nauseam.
But that goes to the idea that the only reason we don't realise we are is because we've got all that mental malware there blocking that information.
So that's where I often hear this phrase about clearing the vessel, clearing the channel so we can connect to source, and that's obviously part of this process.
Exactly, yes, because everything that's going on is actually blocking the way. And it goes back to mindfulness and...
which also lends back to this idea we were talking about before of shedding the skin, this shedding process. So in terms of deprogramming, obviously that's a key component of this idea of growth. But of course, along with growth, it's a very chaotic process.
Yes, and this leads back to why there is... a big camp of escapism going on within the spiritual movement. Because with any growth, you have to go through pain, turmoil. I think the great quote has always been, man cannot change without suffering, for he is the marble and the sculptor.
Yeah, and of course, that doesn't go down very well in the whole pink and fluffy New Age world, does it? It's not, people don't go along, you know, I'm going to start this presentation with this quote. You know, everyone walks out.
Well, pretty much. It's more of a kind of like a spiritual gym class in a way. I mean, you go along, you feel the burns, it hurts.
Sure.
You're not able to walk the next day because you're crying in bed or something like that. But, you know, it does, like they say in the gym, no pain, no gain. You're not going to grow in that sense without going through that chaos of life. But I always find it interesting to how much it reinforces the whole idea of the holographic universe.
Yeah.
Because notice how your life does go crazy when you do try and advance and sort yourself out. And it just shows that how everything is mirroring each other from the external to the internal.
Yeah, it's like the micro and the macro. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So whilst you're going through this deprogramming process, and obviously that's a large part of this chaos of growth. We're trying to, you know, deprogram ourselves. The key aspect during that is to try and seek balance, isn't it? I mean, obviously throughout the whole spiritual journey of life, it's about seeking balance. That's the key, isn't it? And what we're talking about in today's episodes is the many ways in which you can be pulled out of balance.
Well, it is so easy to happen because everything's going on in life, the whole chaos that we always ensue for some reason, generally tips us off that balance. And not only that, half the time we're kind of like leaping to one side anyway, because that's where kind of like our ego is forcing us at the time. You know, gorging yourself on the chocolate or something like this.
Yeah.
But the thing about balance is, again, it's an ideal that can never truly be achieved.
Well, you might momentarily reach the fulcrum and then you're soon off.
Yeah, it never lasts in that sense.
No.
So the whole idea is meant to be that we just slowly but surely spend longer in the centre point than we do swinging side to side.
And obviously also, the more experience we get during that process, we can recognise sooner when we're drifting out of balance.
Well, that's the whole idea of trying to be mindful all the time, in a way, because you can notice more that's going on.
And of course, that is also when it's very helpful to have good, insightful friends or very wise people in your life, because they can spot when you are shifting out of kilter maybe a bit quicker than you can yourself.
Yeah, definitely, because we always have that personal filter on ourselves where we don't see ourselves in the true light of day.
Yeah, but it takes a good friend, as I say, it does take a very good friend to say, to communicate that in a way where we don't have a knee-jerk egoic response.
But it would happen anyway, depends on how far you're off the kilter.
Yeah, that is very true. Yeah, absolutely. I think we'll begin to round up this episode, if that's okay with you, Mike.
Yeah.
It's been a really fascinating exploration in terms of trying to piece together the mystery of life. I think what we found is that it's not a particularly easy process, but the whole point is that it isn't easy, because if it was easy, you know, I mean, what would be the point of existence? And also the idea that we never really find completion. We never really complete the puzzle, do we?
Well, it's the unending journey.
Yeah, and I think sometimes we can lose sight of that when we feel like we're not progressing as quickly on the path as we would wish. I know I've been in that frame of mind recently, you know, feeling a bit stuck, and I think it can bring consolation when you realise, well, as we were saying before, you never truly complete the puzzle, you never really reach a point of completion. So the muddle is the part of the puzzle.
It is.
If you like.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the whole point is not to stay in the muddle, but at a certain point to move on. And in terms of the manifestation process, at that point is just to take an action. At least you're moving your energies forward.
Yeah, because as soon as you stay in one spot, it becomes stagnant. There's no momentum behind anything, so it's much harder to get anywhere. Whereas if at least you're moving somewhere, you can always change your direction at a later point. But if you're not moving.
Absolutely. Just an ending point, what's sprung to mind, Mike, I'll just share this with you and our listeners, is if we see life as an art project, this thing that we are, you know, creating every day, and the different elements and aspects of our life are the different shades, the different colours, the different oils we bring onto the palette. You know, as we use the brush, we might choose to move the brush in, you know, pointy, jaggy movements or large, swaving movements. You know, and we might create different pictures. Really, that's an analogy or a metaphor for life, isn't it? So in that way, everything counts. Everything that's on, you know, on the artist's board, that all counts, doesn't it?
Definitely. And I'll just add to that and say that each individual permission slip, as Bashar puts it, each different practice within the spiritual movement is almost like adding extra colours to your to your palette, so you can actually do more in life.
And greater depth, yeah. And I think that, as I say, it's very consoling also, because there is this tendency when you're on the path, you know, of spiritual growth towards self-mastery, of wanting to exclude lots of colours, wanting to exclude lots of, you know, swathes of the brush on the canvas, when really what we're saying is, when you see life in that way as an art project, no, it all counts. I don't know if you agree with me.
Definitely.
Yeah, it's a very consoling thing. So thank you all for joining us for another episode of Discerning Consciousness. It's been an interesting philosophical discussion. And thank you, Mike, for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
No problem. And goodbye to you all.